Wait for it. Wait for it. And we're live. Hey, all you crazy sci-fi and fantasy fans.
Hi. Hello.
It's time for your daily dose of shenanigans over here at the Blasters and Blades podcast. Just a couple of nerdy veterans and one chaos coordinator geeking out over our science fiction passions and fantastical fantasies. A place where magic is king, the sky is the limit, and space is the place. We are the podcast that puts the fun in dysfunction. So without further ado, we're going to let our guests introduce themselves. So we are introducing to you the Reconnoiter, and I'm butchering it, so correct the pronunciation.
Raconteur.
Raconteur. I will probably butcher it another dozen times. You can correct me every time. Raconteur Press. And we've got the lovely Miss Cedar Sanderson, if you could introduce yourself to our listeners and viewers at home.
Hi, I'm Cedar Sanderson. I don't know if I have a title. I do all the pretty stuff on the covers here at Reconteur. And I'm also an author and other things on the side.
Other things.
It's too long.
I know, right? Yeah.
That's something that counts. Nick says art counts. And when I say no, he throws things at me. So.
Oh,
he too is a man of the pictures.
Yeah, we're here to have an education covers.
Is that what you got your degree in? Did you go to book covers at university? Is that what it was?
My degree is in forensic science and investigation.
Wow, you came out of left field. Okay. All right. So we should not commit any murders when she's around. Nick, take notes.
That's just a general rule.
All right. Next we have Ian McMurtry, otherwise known as the infamous Law Dog.
Ian McMurtry. There's an extra R in there.
Jess hands around
here. I'm 0-0 tonight. Wow.
You're okay. Ian McMurtry, known as Law Dog. I published a couple of books. Retired law enforcement. Spent some time in a salad suit back in the 80s. And Rita and I founded Reconnoiter Press.
Nice. And then we have Rita. Do you want to introduce yourself to the listeners and viewers at home?
Sure. I'm Rita Beeman. I'm a spare, do whatever I need to be, whatever they need me to do.
Mostly bring us alcohol.
Occasional editing and
brilliant titles.
Oh, brilliant titles. Yeah.
Great shoes.
Good shoes. I'm the shoe representative. But also, I'm very good at good at derailing a live stream when other people are doing it, and I can kind of I do the drive-by witticisms.
Well, there's two titles for that: chief of operations or chief of staff.
She's chief operations officer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we good send her out to people that we want to have write for us. So,
and she finds. She finds bars for us to sucker authors into being guest editors.
That's a whole different story.
Really well, epic
bars. Well, in fairness, that was a co effort.
Wrangler of the Booze. That's a impressive title as well.
Yeah, that matters. So, and then me.
I'd say last but not least, we have Miss Jonah Bryant, not Jonah and the Whale.
Jonah.
Wow. This is what happens when you stand too close to too many IEDs. Your hearing is just shot and it makes pronunciation difficult.
I live with Barbie. I'm married to her. So.
Nor are you her mother.
Nor am I her mother. No, I'm Jonah Hayden. On my business card, it says she who makes them wear pants, literally. Because I seem to be the only person in this crew without ADD or a need to twitch with shit all the time.
Ow.
I know, right? I'm the production manager for the press because mostly because everybody was running around in circles tearing their hair out and resembled actors backstage. For 30 years, I was a professional costume designer and worked in the theater. I find that actors and authors are very similar. So in their ability to lose their minds. So
in their defense, not everybody's worth wearing pants for.
You're completely right about that.
You know what? I used to wear pants all the time.
I know, so we don't have to. But no, but you
not everybody's worth not wearing pants for.
Yeah, there you go.
That also tracks.
Yeah, so that's my job here, is that I keep the schedule and I poke people and remind people to get things done. And I take things away from Ian when he's trying to take them apart. So
okay.
Which is why he doesn't have anything that can be disassembled. So
I chose the monkey for this, yeah.
I will say that Law Dog started when you were still on active as a law enforcement officer. Do you ever plan on changing that, or are you going to stick with it? Because it is such a cool moniker.
Well, Rita and I discussed after I retired, a little prior to it, we discussed about me actually going to my name. However, it was pointed out that I had spent 25 years building a brand. Law Dog's been a storyteller on the internet since
news groups, late 90s.
99 or so.
Wow.
And plus, Larry Correa said, you do realize the L's would be at eye level on a bookshelf in a bookstore? And I went, oh.
So in addition to that, you spent a number of years putting bad guys in places they didn't want to be.
Yes.
So keeping it more difficult for them to track you down is wise.
Yeah. I did 26 years. And yeah.
Okay, that's a good reason to do it, and it's just kind of the cool factor. That's got to count for something too.
Yeah, it definitely gets noticed.
So the next part of the introduction, dear listener, dear viewer at home, is how we first found them, and I first became aware of their press through their open calls for anthologies because I love short stories. The timing has yet to work out, but when we started doing small press interviews, I realized somehow we'd forgotten about you. So when we had Courtney on for the sidekick episode, I decided to make this happen. And luckily, she scheduled like a pro.
Uh-huh.
And then promptly skipped the meeting. So
it's like, done, out of here, PokeCon.
Done.
All right. So in order to let you guys stay, though, we do have to do the infamous religion question. Are you ladies and gentlemen ready for this?
Yes.
I suppose.
All right. We have Star Wars. Or excuse me, no. Starship Troopers, Dune, or Aliens?
Starship Troopers.
Starship Troopers. Dune.
Starship Troopers.
You are the odd
man. Like, that's a surprise. You know,
yeah, it's
like...
I've never been odd.
However, I will add the caveat, Starship Troopers, the book. There is no movie. So the whole book and movie thing, no, there is no Starship Troopers movie.
There was an animated cartoon, but actually
see, now that one was pretty good. Yeah. So
I am unaware.
So you'll get a kick out of this, Law Dog. We started publishing originally as the Sci-Fi Shenanigans way back in 2016. Season 1, Episode 5 of the Sci-Fi Shenanigans. So, again, 2016. I did a review with myself, Chris Winder, and Paulie Cooley, where we reviewed Heinlein's Starship Troopers. And I said, infamously, I liked the movie better than the book. And I still get hate mail for that one 5 years later. The book to me was a
fire passion.
So for me, the book was almost a political treatise. I didn't dislike it, but it wasn't what I expected from an adventure tale. Whereas the book or the movie was an action flick, which is what I expected from a name like Starship Troopers. And see, yeah. I still get hate mail.
It makes sense. I mean, I have not seen the movie, and I'm probably not going to.
There is no movie. You can watch it.
But I've been told that the movie that shall not be named bears no resemblance to the book. And if you approach it without the title, that it's...
Yeah. Okay, so just to give you an idea, I've been around science fiction for way too long. I have a story about Starship Troopers, the script, because I used to hang out with John Varley way back in the Dark Ages of Time. And they actually offered the script for Starship Troopers to him when he was working in Hollywood doing... things. Now, mind you, he was a draft dodger and like was in Haight-Ashbury and stuff and was completely against it. And they were like, he was like, just because I'm a science fiction author does not mean I should be writing the script for this book. Right. So he was like, I don't know what to do with this thing. So he attempted something and sent it back. And obviously they didn't use that because it was even worse than what actually appeared on the screen. So they were sending it to the wrong people to begin with the scripts. So yeah, just know.
So I actually found Heinlein's books through that movie, and then I ended up reading The Moon is a Harsh Mistress, and I read the Space Cadet stuff and all of his other stuff. So, I mean, it's not a bad gateway drug.
Yeah, well, if it got you in the Heinlein, okay. Yeah, we'll forgive you. So,
well, that's good to know. That's good to know. All right, and because we are polytheistic here at the Blasters and Blades podcast, the Legend, Kroll, or Conan the Barbarian?
Conan the Barbarian.
Conan the Barbarian.
Conan.
Great close, Conan.
All right.
I like the whole punch in the camel thing. Totally go for that. You're right on board with that. So,
so have you guys enjoyed it across all the mediums? Because it was a comic book. Obviously, it was the Schwarzenegger movie. Yeah. I think they did a remake of it as well.
Jason Momoa.
Was it any good, Nick?
It was all right. It was a popcorn flick. I got my money's worth because it was a matinee.
Okay. Okay.
Some segment of the audience.
I was watching Schwarzenegger, and I had forgotten that there was a certain scene in it. And now, mind you, my son, who was about 15 at the time, walks into the living room where I'm watching this, and he's gotten to the scene with the witch in the cave. Oh. And my son's like, "What are you watching?"
The orgy scene was yet to come.
We hadn't even got there, but my child was out.
It wasn't that he didn't want to watch it. He just didn't want to watch it with you.
Right? We're going to spoil it for people who haven't seen it. And I don't know who those three people are, but there's titties and Conan.
So, Nick, having seen both, how does the remake stack up to the original Schwarzenegger movie?
It's just, you can't. You know, because you have Arnold and his giant muscles and he's trying to cram, you know.
How can anything ever excel the side of James Earl Jones in Rick James mode? Are they the same person?
Well, that's true. I forgot James Earl Jones was in that movie.
Am I right?
So was James Young. I mean, I want to make him that outfit, right? So, I mean, he needs that outfit.
He does. So. That, he would rock that.
Yeah, he would totally rock it.
Well, it's not just Arnold. It's, you know, John Milius did the script.
Yeah.
And the direction, if I remember, it's Milius.
Yeah. So.
Nice.
And
all right.
The gallons and gallons of alcohol-infused blood that they spilled.
Yeah.
Because they filmed it all. They filmed the initial part in Norway, and the Hollywood blood they were using was freezing. So they cut it with Aquavit. The stuntmen are walking around plaster.
All right, and because we aim to rectify the great inequities of adulthood, where no one asks you what your favorite dinosaur is, we're going to ask you, what is your favorite dinosaur?
My favorite dinosaur isn't a dinosaur, the Dimetrodon.
Ooh, good choice.
Because that's the only thing we have locally for this area.
Yeah.
Unless you're really into trilobites and crinoids, which I collected a nice little death puddle of trilobites this last year.
Yeah, well, yes, really cute little ones, too. Uh-huh, okay. Yeah. Pardon her while she slips into scientist. So.
All good.
Yes, that's okay, though.
What's your favorite? What about you, Rita?
Brontosaurus. I mean, Playgrounds and Land of the Lost.
Yeah.
Am I right?
Yep. I agree. I get you. So they wouldn't eat you. What about you?
It could be a very good friend named Baby.
Absolutely. What about you, Law Dog?
Ankylosaurus.
That is not one anyone else has ever said. Why'd you pick that one?
It's a contrarian, I'll bet you.
I have a fondness for things that bunker down. Are covering spikes and have a great long whack bonk on the end of their tail.
A whack bonk.
That's the scientific name, people. Look it up.
Yeah. So I'm just going to be one of the boring ones because I love Tyrannosauruses. I just love them. I love T-Rexes mostly because when I was a little kid, I went to the New Haven Natural History Museum and they had a Tyrannosaurus giant skeleton. And I was like 8 and it was huge. And then I saw Alien, and I remember seeing Alien for the first time and thinking, I bet that girl Tyrannosaurus could totally take this alien. You know, and I always wanted to movie, and it just never happened. It should be. I mean, the short arms might be kind of an issue, but you know, the it was like, so
now
you
know, the aliens predated human civilization.
I mean, right? So you would think that there would be like a Tyrannosaurus versus alien movie. Get away from her, you bitch, has a whole new meaning, right? So, I mean, a whole different get away from your you bitch movie. I mean, it's like, so that would be great.
Now I'm picturing a Predator versus dinosaur movie, too.
So, well, yeah, that or the, the little guys, the little fast ones.
Velociraptors.
Because I had cats that were like velociraptors, and chickens pissed off velociraptors, right? So...
A velociraptor is what happens if you take a dachshund and give it really long legs.
Okay.
Wow. Roughing the listener. It's like not okay. Nothing.
All right.
That doesn't, anyway, so.
And because we are civilized here, we are no longer knuckle-dragging troglodytes. Coffee or tea, and how do you take it?
Coffee, because most people know, okay, so we have a sergeant major, former sergeant major working for us, who made the mistake of walking up to me as I was heading for coffee at the hotel. And I just turned and looked at him, and he was like, let's go over there now. It was like, I'll let you introduce that stuff. So I'm totally a coffee girl, and I am dangerous before my first cup.
And how do you drink it?
I like a little coffee with my cream and sugar.
Outstanding. Me too.
It has to be the right color, you know. I mean, I particularly like the flavored things, but not the ones with nuts in it because it'll kill me. But I mean, it's just there's something about that first cup, and the very first sip of the first cup is like, it's like suddenly, like scotch, all is right with the world. So
you know, the best part of waking up is Folgers.
No, it is not.
It's bourbon with my coffee. That's the best part about waking up.
Right. So I know you're not a coffee drinker, though. We probably should do this. So, but we have our very own Blanket Fort coffee.
King Harv's Coffees.
Actually sponsors.
Made a Blanket Fort blend for us.
And as a joke. But so many people asked for it when we announced it on the live stream.
Still buy it.
That they buy it now. And he sends us packages of it. He sends us pounds and pounds of coffee. So
we will link to that in the show notes if you want to try their coffee. But we also are sponsored by a coffee company, Coffee Brand Coffee. Links in the show notes. Podcast Grunts is the code. Get 10% off. If you want to try something different, you can try the Press Gang.
Okay. We should trade. We'll trade back and forth.
There we go. All right. What about you, Law Dog? What do you drink if you don't drink coffee or tea?
I drink coffee by the gallon. I'll drink tea in the evening, but coffee in the morning.
The most mellow we've ever seen him on a live stream was when I fed him espresso right before the live stream.
See, that was pretty effective, I have to admit. It's more like an ADD drug for you, though. It's more like his daily dose of medicine.
He's a marvel. He can drink a big cup of coffee and just go right to sleep.
Me too. Yes. I feel you.
As far as how I take it, if it's okay, if it's the first pull off a silver bullet at 4:30 in the morning in the field, I want it black. Other than that, I've drunk so much midnight cop coffee that anything other than that first pull burns my stomach. So it's got sweetener and half and half in it.
All right. So I have to ask, Nick, since you've both been Army and a cop, how does cop coffee compare to Army coffee? Is it one and the same?
No.
No. Cop coffee is a lot different. Army coffee is like, you know, when they're making Army coffee, it's like, oh, okay, that's good enough. Stick your MRE spoon in there and it'll stand up.
Army coffee, they put a whole bunch of Folgers into this big tub of boiling water.
Yes.
For X amount of time. Then they pour water, cold water, and drag all the grounds down. Then they scoop the it's cowboy coffee, basically. The coffee in a silver bullet. And I was always first one in line with my canteen cup. Cop coffee is whatever is cheap, run through the pour over by somebody who doesn't know how to make coffee.
Okay. So both different flavors of suck.
Well, it also depends what side of the station you go to. If you go to where all the agents and we make our own coffee, you'll get some really strong stuff. And then you go over to like management and supervisors, their side of the house, and then there's a Keurig with all these flavored coffees.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. All right. What about you, Rita?
I mostly stay off the demon bean, but
that was my nickname in college.
Demon bean? Are you serious? I thought it was original.
I see that quite a bit when a unique name comes across or someone calls something that I've never heard it be called that before. I'd be like, oh, that's my nickname in college.
I like that. I like that. That's a good thing. I'm going to use that.
Feel free to steal it.
I generally eschew drinking coffee. I don't like the flavor of it, but I love cream and I love sugar. I share that with Jonna. My grandfather, when I was a kid, my grandpa would get the Brock's Pick-A-Mix. Remember those? Mm-hmm. There were all these bins of candy, and you could have a scoop at the grocery store and scoop out whichever mix of candies, and you paid by the pound for them up at the thing. And grandpa got these coffee-flavored candies. It was very sweet, creamy, sugary, with a hint of coffee. So I want the suggestion of coffee, not actual coffee. So my favorite is Folgers Coffee Crystals, the best cup part of waking up, as I pointed out. We should hit them up for, I'm sorry. But I like that sweet, creamy flavor. I like coffee ice cream, but mostly coffee is one of those big ripoffs in life that smells amazing and tastes terrible. No offense.
Sounds like my second husband. So.
Ouch. So, okay. You know, every once in a while, I will get hooked back in. I'll go for years and years without drinking it. I was driving back from the Ozarks visiting family a couple of months ago, and I was getting a breakfast biscuit, and they had that iced coffee. I thought, ooh, let's try that. I haven't drunk coffee in years. And I got it, and it was just like sweet and creamy, and there was it had been in the room with coffee once. And it was good. So that's it. Very low standards. So coffee, I do like Earl Grey tea, but I don't drink tea daily. And I'm enough of a spaz without the caffeine, frankly.
So when you drink your Earl Grey, do you have to like do pinky up and go, Earl Grey, hot, in your best Picard accent? Which I totally didn't do. I butchered it. I tried.
I do, but it's ever so smart and select.
And last, oh yeah, pinky up, Nick. Last but not least, how do you take coffee or tea, and how do you take it?
I generally start out my morning pressing the on button for the coffee because my dear husband sets it up, so all I have to do is hit the button. And I put cream in the first cup, and then I just keep refilling the same cup, but not adding more cream. And eventually, I'm basically drinking it black.
So you have slow burn into the black, right? So
there are actually a few coffees that I have found that are mellow enough to drink black from the start.
Geisha.
Geisha is good. Oddly enough, Death Wish coffee, which is ultra caffeinated,
really
super mellow. Mm-hmm. So I'm always looking for a nice mellow blend. I'll have to try you guys as sponsor.
Yeah.
But I'm working my way through a big order from Jim Harps right now. Mm-hmm. My husband hates when I do flavored coffee. So I just indulge in nice coffee.
I have a question for Nick. At your police station, does anyone drink the flavored creamers? And what about those?
On the management side, yeah. So like the supervisors.
Say no more.
Yeah, the rest of us... all of us on the line, most of us drink it black, but I got one guy, because I'm on the boat unit. He loves his Starbucks. So as we're heading out to San Diego Bay to go get on the boat, he's like, oh, I got to stop here. I'm like, ugh. It's like, dude, get your Starbucks before you come to work. So we're not parking the rig right in front of there, scaring people off.
So he's in the Border Patrol, so there are sometimes people just run when they see him.
Oh yeah, especially.
Yeah. He's like, dude, I'm off. I'm not gonna bother you. Shut up. Come on, I just want my coffee.
I just want my coffee. That's all I want.
Nobody will get hurt. So.
All right. So now, since we got that out of the way, this is the part where we would normally throw in a sponsor, so we don't have to stop talking. And let me mark this, Nick. All right. Now that I've marked the mark, since they were gracious enough to come on and talk to us, they are sponsoring this episode. They just don't know it yet. So we are going to link to their website where you can find all their awesome, like 27 bazillion anthologies. Okay. It's 24 from
24. So
My goal is, I understand from Courtney, you guys are going for 30 anthologies in 2024.
29. She's not 30. So
you're coming in broken. You said 30 again.
So we were originally doing 24 and 24, but as usual, we got a couple of really great ones with like a huge number of submissions that we couldn't say no to. So Oliver Byrne became 3, and then Steampunk one became 2 and then maybe 3. And then James knocked it out of the park and we're getting 2 giant freaking robots. And then I was like, no, that's 29. We're done. We're not doing anymore. Just quit. Knock it off.
So we're what I call next gen publishing.
Yeah.
Our first one we ever put an open call for Ghosts of Malta. And we got like 60 something.
It was ridiculous.
60 something stories. And they were good. It's like, okay, well, we'll do 10, and then we'll do another one, and then we'll do another one. So if we do an open call and we get more than the 10 we usually go with, hell with it. We'll fire up another book.
Yeah, so we're halfway through 2025 on scheduling right now. So, I know, right?
It's a good problem.
It's a good problem. So
an embarrassment of riches.
Yeah.
That's one of the things I've noticed because I used to do under Bayonet Books, I did my own anthology series, and I'm doing a run with Three Ravens. And once he can sucker you into doing anything. I don't know. We were just talking, and before you know it, I'd said yes, and I didn't even realize. And it was just, I don't know how that happened. He could sell ice to an Eskimo.
He's fun.
He convinced me to fly from California just to mow his lawn.
Boom.
So,
wow.
So he's.
In California. I'll jump at the chance to leave anytime.
You'll find once you start doing anthologies, everybody with the wild hair up their backside suddenly comes to you with all their great ideas, and sometimes you end up saying yes, and that's probably how you got to 29.
Sort of.
That's how I got on this show.
Actually, what happened was he got drunk. No, you think I'm kidding. I'm not. So we did the first one. It's like, and we did the Ghost of Malta, and then we had this thing called Fool's Con where he was sitting next to me and Scott, and we were drinking a lot of
we were taste testing bourbons.
Yeah, so, no, that was Scotch that time.
I'm sorry,
yeah,
Scotch.
Bourbons were the next.
A really nice Scotch that was like a campfire in my mouth, and nobody remembers the name of
it. I know, right? So, but we were sitting there, and he was like, "I've got the Ghost of Malta done and everything," and my friend Scott was like pouring me tastes of shots of the Scotch. And I would take a little sip and he would go, "Look," and I would go like, and I'd trade and I'd take the little cup away from him. And he just kept going.
So three other of our friends were had me telling stories.
Yes.
And Tom Rogdenby and Tully. And Wade Wisner.
And Wade, yep.
Mm-hmm. So here I am telling stories and I've got my little cup and I drink from it. I'm telling another story. Look down. Oh, I didn't drink from my cup. And I was so drunk.
He took his hands off of it. I just kept putting the full one in front of him.
And then somebody said, "So Space Cowboy Anthology." I said, "What the hell? Space Cowboys?"
Well, actually, that did never really happen.
Oh.
Because
they told me.
We had the live stream like after the event where everyone was sitting around going, "Did we really drink that much?" And we were like, and everyone was like, "Wow, we're so excited about Space Cowboys." And you're like, "What are you talking about? What Space Cowboys?" And we're like, "You totally agreed. Fool's Con. You sat right there and said you'd do it." And he was like, "Wait, what?" And so off we went. So like 2 years later and 20 some odd books into this, he never said yes. We just decided we wanted to do it and got him drunk. So
At Tollcon. A couple months later, we're up at the room party.
Oh my God.
And somebody brought Oil Fire.
Oh God.
Which is a pecan. It's like a pecan pie. And it's dangerous. It's very dangerous. And Kelly Grace and I were telling stories.
Not to be missed.
Somebody's were filling my glass.
Not me this time.
Not me.
And I remember Kelly saying, "You know, Your Honor, I can explain." And I thought that'd be a great I was drunk enough to say that'd be a great anthology.
But that wasn't the next one we did though.
No, No, that was the next one I agreed to.
We did the next Malta. So yeah, after that. Because we had something Malta.
And it just started to snowball.
It snowballed in a huge way.
I have a pin that goes on my anytime in a con that says not responsible anthology agreed to while drunk.
Yeah. The nice part of that is now everybody brings us really good hooch, you know, and so we get really high quality liquor passed under his nose going, so if I give him this bottle, and we got like five different scotches at Liberty Con, and people are like, I have this great idea for anthology. I'm like, I'll take that. Thank you very much. So.
She says it's great, but we have a shelf with various liquors on it. And of all of the many bottles on that shelf, the only unopened one is the bottle of Everclear. So we will go. The shelf is starting to sag. So we will load up a case of liquor.
A cooler of liquor.
We will go to a con. We will give away the liquor, and then we cut. And when we get back, there'll be more in the car.
It's the everlasting gobstopper of food.
Yeah, we're good at it.
I need that problem. My liquor cabinet is always empty.
Speaking of hillbilly, last night, we had gotten rid of half of our booze. And then he finds this little thing in the parking lot who had tried his mead and liked it and said, would you like to take some of that home? And she said, sure.
I didn't know there was an embargo of bringing more stuff back to Texas.
Is he, what, you brought home like 5 or 6 bottles?
We were mead running,
yeah. So we have this giant shelf of alcohol, which is.
But booze is not the only thing that results in anthology.
No, okay.
Sometimes it's spite results in anthology.
Oh, this is our spite anthology. So.
Oh. So I don't know. Do y'all know about MC Hogarth and Games Workshop?
No.
MC Hogarth.
MC Hogarth published a short story called "Spots the Space Marines." Spot the Space Marines. And put it up on Amazon, happy as a clam at high tide, and then next day it's gone. And Games Workshop, that does the 40K universe, had filed a DMCA with Amazon saying they had copyrighted Space Marines and been doing this. So she said, well, and got a hold of the electronic EFF, Electronic Freedom Frontier or something.
Yeah.
And they sued Games Workshop. And Games Workshop finally had to say, no, they don't own Space Marines.
Yeah. She won. It cost a lot of money, but she won that lawsuit. So.
Well, when she did, everybody popped up with Space Marines anthology because it was now free and clear. And apparently Games Workshop had been doing it for a while. Well, everybody that popped one up never invited Maggie to publish with them, to submit a story.
The woman who made it possible.
The founder of the Feast didn't get invited to any of these anthologies.
The one who invented the fidget spinner.
So Courtney's telling me about this. It's like, if she's got, tell her to send those stories to us, we'll publish them.
So we created anthologies for, and we're up to 3 now?
Yeah, the third one just came out. She's in the first 2, and not the third one, but she's looking at the 4th. In honor of Maggie Hogarth and her taking on the big nasty bad guys.
And Spite,
because she should have been out there first. I mean, they should have been inviting her
and
in.
She is such a sweetheart.
Yeah, tiny little Cuban woman. So just fabulous. Really cool lady.
And that's the kind of hairpins we are.
Yeah.
She got that right.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And Space Marines is actually, along with Space Cowboy, is one of our kind of our flagship.
Yeah,
because Space Marines and Space Cowboys are the anthologies that go and go and go and
well, okay, go. Yeah, and now we have,
and we occasionally do have people come to us with ideas, and we're like, yes, this is a great idea, we're going to do that.
Uh-huh.
And in having done that, we have come up with an interesting underlying theme that you don't see very often in science fiction and fantasy. Which is more family-centered stories.
Where the guys are not just buffoons, they're actually protectors who take care of their families. So,
hang on, this cover has gotten us some accolades, so I want to make sure that this covers.
So, the comment that got me on this one, because that's why I designed that cover, is that you don't see a white male portrayed as being nurturing, protective father very often. And the first cover of that, because it's Casey Azell's idea. The first cover is basically Casey Azell as science fiction Madonna and child.
Yeah, she looks great.
But this was, I had shown her both covers at the beginning, and she really wanted this one to happen. Because it is just such a nice cover with a guy sheltering his children.
Yeah.
And that's not something you get to see very often.
I believe that, if I'm not mistaken, Casey's comment was, I think my ovaries are sweet.
Yeah, she did say that. So yeah, we get ideas from some interesting places. And
with Olive Byrne, with Fierce Love, and now we're doing Alien Family Values, mm-hmm. which is stories of mismatched and odd families. We definitely have this theme going on with some of the side anthologies.
Well, not only that, but some of the stories in All Will Burn, because the
basically
just gave up.
He's been drinking a lot.
The whole thing was what parents would do for their children. My children will survive or all will burn, right? It got a little dark. Some of those stories got a little dark. So this one came up with, hey, can we do a story?
As a palate cleanser.
We do Moggies in Space.
Can we do Moggies in Space?
Hence the giant cat behind us.
Now, I have to give credit here. One of our technical editors, brilliant Sarah Clitheroe. I ran the story by her, and she said, you know, that would make a great anthology. So I have to share credit with her. And then I broached the topic with these fabulous people, and then suddenly I have a gym mob.
This is what happens. You don't stand still next to us.
I forgot.
You stand next to us, we're like, oh, you're doing that now. Okay.
So I forgot that rule that working at a company, if you say somebody ought to do this, then suddenly that's your job. You were just voluntold to do it.
Yeah, pretty much. That's what happens.
The Moggies, and the question we always get asked is, what is a Moggie? Well, my background is colonial Africa, so I was raised by various British type folks, and Moggie
Scots,
yeah, and Irish. A Moggie is a British slang for a cat of indeterminate ancestry.
Which is every cat, isn't it?
It is the cat version of mutt. A Moggie is just a mutt with retractable claws.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, we'll keep nattering on unless you stop us and have a question. So,
oddly enough, though, the second we just published today, Moggies in Space 3, of that galaxy far away, and it's the anthologies have been warmly received. And as I said, I like the idea of them as a palate cleanser, as this thing you go to, and it's lighthearted and fun and fluffy and silly. And again, but it's still, you know, it's still spacey and sciencey, and it's got a lot of different exciting flavors within, you know, within the covers of the book. But one of them, I did include a horror story, which I thought was amazingly written.
Oh yeah.
Beautifully composed. But generally it's going to be lighthearted and going to be something that you're not going to have. Well, not that it, y'all have nightmares or anything like that, but it's not something that you're going to like go. Yeah, you know, it's not something that's going to be unsettling, I hope, to read. Although there are some non-existent Moggies are harmed in the making of the anthologies. But generally, it's fun. And I love a happy ending. I just said that out loud.
You did.
I'm so sorry. I did in public. I'm
sorry. I know.
We'll forgive you later.
Thank you.
To give you an idea of, they tend towards our whimsical. We're known for being somewhat whimsical.
Mm-hmm.
And she was reading a story about Newfoundland dogs jumping out of aircraft with cats in pods with machine guns. And the dog is lifting his face. So helmet, his lip, so his lips go.
I was like, that is the Casasa story. It's not a spoiler because it's the opening scene of the story.
Yeah.
It's just like, you're in, come on in. It was so good. And it just, I was howling. I was like, whatever's in this, I hope it doesn't turn crappy because I'm putting this in. But the whole story, it's consistently excellent. It's outstanding.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's been a delight. It's been a delight. And I think that whimsical, that sense of joy is a defining characteristic. And also, I mean, looking at things like All Will Burn, this righteous indignation, and there's nothing fiercer than a parent fighting for their child. So we've got the intense seriousness that that we look for in our greatest works of fiction. And while this is very lighthearted, I think we're doing something that's just amazing in and speaks to the very best aspects of human nature as well.
Mm-hmm.
If I can just be lofty for a minute.
Yes.
I do think there's something for everyone.
Well, I mean, part of the goal when we started all this was we were tired of nihilistic science fiction. We wanted to return to the wonderful feel of wonder and excitement and going out into the universe that the pulps of the 30s, 40s, and 50s.
I loathe grimdark with the fiery heat of a thousand suns. Grimdark is terrible. And when I was growing up in Africa, we didn't have TVs. And Dad was over there as an old engineer, so we hung around with petroleum engineers all the time. And every one of them would have a collection of pocketbooks that they would bring to various wherever they were going. And the majority of those pocketbooks were Robert E. Howard, Edgar Rice Burroughs, Talbot Mundy. I mean, just, I cut my teeth on pulps.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Louis L'Amour, pulp. And I don't like this. I honestly don't like stuff coming out, most of the stuff coming out now.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm gonna chase a rabbit here. I don't know if, and this is something Johnny can speak to particularly, okay. Although I don't think I've ever discussed it with her. During the real industrial, the really emergence of the industrial revolution in England, I think 18th century forward, the men's jacket was designed with a big pocket for a book, and the size of your pocket pulp book is the pocket was made specifically for a book that size.
It's a chapbook.
This has been an ongoing thing, and I think that the excitement for literature and the excitement. There's some point I'm driving at. I swear.
She's getting there somewhere. She's getting there.
This is, you mentioned that the Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
They're that same size and everything. There's this continuum of literature that I think is absolutely brilliant. It's so important that we look at things that are appealing to people that are not just some industry thing, but that actually enliven the spirit and speak to things that are of our values. I mean, I think we're a pretty varied bunch here at Raconteur. By the way, Raconteur is a storyteller. And that's why it was the perfect thing, because that's the defining characteristic of this guy. And we're all, most of us are Southern or Southern adjacent. And
Military
brat. I don't think
military brat. We don't qualify. We grew up everywhere. So,
but there's a huge storytelling tradition among a lot of what we grew up, especially the Scots, the Irish, and the British that Ian grew up around in Africa, because there were all these old RAF pilots who worked with his father in the petroleum industry, and they had stories. Mm-hmm. And he grew up hearing that, and I think sitting at their feet is sort of what fueled his ardor for telling stories. Actually, it's not even an ardor. It's just who he is and what he does. It's part of his DNA. And anyway, I am so thrilled to be, can I just say, I love you guys. I love being part of this because it energizes and enlivens me. I'll yield the floor.
We should have them talk now.
Speaking of yielding the floor, how did your press, because Raconteur, I probably butchered it again, but how did your press come to be?
Closer. How did it come to be?
Oh, God. Okay.
Our origin story is on our Substack, but you can tell it.
I've been writing stories about law enforcement on the internet since 1998. The Law Dog Files were various gun boards, various other places. Things would get too serious, I'd write a funny story about something that happened in law enforcement. Fast forward, and Larry Correa talked me into, well, a whole bunch of folks, this one in particular, talked me into actually publishing it. And we were briefly number one on Amazon in the broad humor category and number 82 in overall book sales. It's like, you know, I might actually be able to make a living with this. So I was talking to her and she said, you know, you got to have a press. You got to call it raconteur. You're a storyteller. So raconteur press. I was thinking troubadour, but raconteur. So fast forward a bit.
Several years later,
I
moved to town.
She moves to town. This is important. A friend of mine, I was born in Malta. I'm very, very proud of my Maltese heritage. So a friend of mine said, hey, what would have happened if the Germans had been smart and landed at Malta instead of Crete? It's like, really?
Bing.
So Facebook, there was like a several hundred Facebook entry about me describing how bad of an idea that would be. because Malta, the national sport of Malta for the last 5,000 years is, let's fortify this bastard. Everyone has fought over that little island. So speckle out through this is people saying, you need to write this book. It's like, I don't have time. Well, I tell you what, I want to write a story in this. It's like, well, whatever. And I ended up with this little vignette of the ghosts of previous invaders sitting on a parapet watching the Germans fight through Valletta and little smart-ass comments. And a whole bunch of people said, do the anthology. I will send you a story. It's like, uh-huh. I've dealt with this. I realize that if every 10 people say they will send you a story, you might get two. Maybe. So it's like, whatever, no way, not going to happen. And it just keeps going. You need to do the anthology. I've got a story. I'm writing a story. So this one says, all right, let's go to lunch.
No, you said let's go to lunch.
Oh, okay. We went to lunch.
Got done with the live stream and we went to lunch.
And she says,
mind you, he'd been wandering around the shop, the blanket fort, this space right here. Going, I don't know, nobody read a story for this. We've been doing it for like a week and a half, and I was tired of it. So
we go to lunch, and she says, put up a call. Put up a fresh Facebook post, a call for stories. Then shut off your phone. Let's eat the chicken fried steaks and then look at it later.
Yes.
So, okay, whatever. You know, whatever.
Nobody's going to answer that. Nobody's going to get
to nobody's going to care.
Lunch, just for the hour of lunch. Just the hour of lunch. Ping, 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 ping. 39 requests later.
In 45 minutes, I got 39 people say, hell yeah, I'm writing a story now.
Because what do we know? Right.
So I go home. It's like I'm slightly gobsmacked. And Rita says, whatever you do, publish under Raconteur Press.
Mm-hmm.
So we publish under Raconteur Press.
Well, and then you said, I don't know how to edit an anthology. And I kind of know this woman.
She said, I have no idea how to edit an anthology. Like, even if they send me the stories, I don't know.
No. See, because Courtney.
Now, and she said,
can do that.
My roommate. Oh, this is the funny part. My roommate does that sort of thing. I say, oh, okay. So. Courtney, I've known Courtney, so
yeah.
Courtney is putting together, and then we get the cover, and the cover doesn't say Courtney, and I went, "Do you allow cussing?" Because I went, "Who the fuck is this person?"
She didn't know her it was under her.
It was
name.
Under
he
a
didn't
pen
know that.
Name. I didn't know that.
Well, all these things we've learned, right?
Yes.
So, but yeah. So, and then we had a party at Tolcon and released the book, and it's kind of all history from there.
Yeah,
and it's been...
Well, not only that, but people kept turning in Malta stories.
Yeah.
And they were good Malta. They were good stories.
It was fun.
We wound up like 80 of them.
Yeah, and we ended up with, well, we have four books, so.
And I said, okay, we'll do a book.
Okay, let's do another one, so.
And then it's like, you know, I'm trying to find the ones to put in the 10.
Yeah.
And it's like, I can't pick 10.
Mm-hmm.
And this one goes, well, then do a second story. It's like,
and
or second
it just
book.
Kept
like,
going. And okay. It kept going and kept going and going. And then the roller coaster took off and we were like, ah! It's like, and then the LLC happened.
And now you're a real boy.
Now it's a real boy. He's a real boy now.
We got investor and everything. So,
yeah,
oh,
we're just like, let's go. Let's just do it. So suddenly now I'm a bookkeeper. What the hell? How did that happen?
Right.
So yeah. And so that's what happened. We had like 18 months of utter complete craziness and then became real.
It hasn't stopped yet.
Well, no, it has not. And then so about 3 months in, Courtney was winding around her office at home, just like 3 a.m. She was so blown out. I'm like, what's going on? She says, it's me. So we actually sat down and went through all the different book projects she was involved in, which was over 40. I went, not just her, but everything that's going on, because there's how many authors live here? And so I came in the next morning and I said, I just hired myself as your production editor. And he went, okay.
Yeah, so, production manager. I said, good.
And here we are.
And then, Rita was already on board. And Cedar walks in the next day and says, look at this. Look at what I'm doing with Midjourney. I went, we need a cover for it. And Cedar went, what?
Wait, how? She walked in and stood still next to us. And here we are. So yeah, I mean, like, it's been interesting. So yeah, I mean, like I said, we'll just blather on if you just let us.
Yeah,
so.
if you don't cut us off, we'll keep talking.
If you have a question for them,
we're shy and don't like calling attention to ourselves.
And I swear, like a New Haven fishwife. So sorry. Edit and post.
Well, theater for 30 years.
We ain't gonna do that shit. We ain't editing nothing.
So for the record, we have edited exactly 2 episodes. One because the audio on the other side was so bad, but the author was so cool, we wanted to get it out there. So I paid an editor for Davis Ashura. his interview was good. And then we edited once because we were pre-recording for a guy that was a contractor overseas. That's what he told us. And so we recorded it in the summer. And I made the joke that he was scaling Mons Olympus, which is a mountain on Mars, if people don't catch it when I make that joke, for the CIA. And then a week later, before we were going to put it live, he said, my bosses don't like that you mentioned them in your joke. Please take it out. Yes, sir. So that was the second episode we've ever edited, because we're too lazy for that show.
Outed him that you did that.
That's because the alphabet agencies, while they love climbing Monses,
yeah, right.
Don't like talked about.
I mean, we have Agent Frank,
you're gonna have to edit that out. I'm so sorry.
We didn't mention names, so we're good this time, I think.
Well, yeah, it's like Agent Frank who watches the live stream. Oh, God. He has a Chuck Liver light that's on all the time because we just torture the poor boy.
We joke that we have an NSA agent assigned to our live stream because we talk about stuff we probably shouldn't talk about.
Yeah, I'm surprised YouTube wasn't throwing you off.
Yeah, so. No kidding.
Yeah.
Facebook actually threw our live stream off.
They did.
Yes, they did.
They did.
And we joke that he cries in the shower after the episode.
the live stream goes, yeah, there are no rails. We left the rails behind a long time ago.
And the chat starts a whole long time before we even open. It's nuts. And then the same thing. Yeah, and Three Moms is doing the same thing. Oh, yeah. The chat just wanders off on its own. So,
but isn't that more fun? The spontaneity to be
while you're in the line
and invigorating. Sorry,
yep,
this
sorry.
Is how we wind up with squoozies.
Squoozies, yes. Sorry, do you have other questions? Because we're just going to keep going.
So, do you have any? So, you obviously you do anthologies. You also are working with some authors on full proper novels. Are there any
not for this
not
year.
Not this year. We would like to do novels, but there is absolutely no way. Sorry, that's my job. Have you noticed I'm the one who says no all the time?
It's
because you guys all get let's do this. And I'm like, no. We want to do novels.
Yeah. Novels are where the money is. So we need to break into novels sometime along here.
Yes.
It's just that 2024 and probably.
Well, we want to start exploring it in 2025.
We are stress testing our TTPs right now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We're launching an anthology every 2 weeks, and we're doing it fast and we're doing it quick so we can see where things break down. And then we go back and fix it.
Yeah.
And then do it fast and quick.
Yeah. Can I say this? I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, part of it is that we want to make sure that we can do this exactly right first.
Yeah.
And serve the people who are doing our anthologies first before we add something in that might make us train wreck on our schedule for 2024. Because while we're whimsical and silly, we are dead serious about the business side of this.
Right.
We are dead serious that our authors get everything they need to have a good story, to get paid, to have a fair and reasonable contract, and to have us completely focus on their books that are coming out. And we've set a schedule that we allowed to expand to 29 that we made the promise to do that. So adding in, I mean, we may start talking about novels, and because in July we have our next year meeting, because we really like to do that, but we have to make sure that we can step up to the plate for whoever comes to us with a novel.
That's absolutely true. It's a completely different order of magnitude from editing a collection of short stories, because with a short story, ideas like continuity, all of these elements, the components that go into a short story, it's much easier for a short story than a long format story where it's much more exhaustive.
Yeah, we have to be able to give our editors the space to devote the time to the proper editing of the novels. And right now we can't do that. There's just no way. Right. So we're trying to develop newer guest editors, and we're trying to bring in more copy editors, which we just have two more, because we're finding out, okay, then we really do need this. So we're practicing, as Mike says, Sergeant Major on our team says, we are practicing tactical patience.
Again, we're stress testing our TTPs. This is how we do it. Let's run as hard and fast as we can. Ooh, we had a failure.
Okay,
and so we did. We found one. Yeah. We fixed it. Now we're going to keep going until we find the next one.
Yeah, because slow measured growth is so much better than taking on way too much too soon and train wrecking. And we don't want to train wreck.
We started doing the Elon Musk Starship. We push it till it explodes, fix it, and then once the year's done.
No, before it explodes, we fix it.
Elon
paces in the shop back and forth.
I have a bit of ADD.
That is okay. Nick lives with it. He's got Stabby, who's his ADD monkey that he has to kind of corral, or she stabs him.
You have is this a toy monkey or an actual monkey?
He's a 14-year-old boy.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay.
And Stabby is his wife. So.
I was hoping you had a persona, like your alter ego.
Yeah, no.
Monkeys are Satan's oven mitts. They are evil. If the only difference between monkeys and Nazis is that monkeys wouldn't have felt bad putting people into cattle cars. Monkeys are evil.
So you were Team Godzilla, not Team King Kong.
Like, Godzilla all the way. My man.
He doesn't.
I hate monkeys. I loathe monkeys.
He routinely beats up monkey puppets on the live stream. So monkeys are not us.
So obviously we try to keep the podcast limited, and obviously we have no problem getting content from you guys. But if people wanted to know, most of our audience are listeners. So first off, how can people buy your anthologies? And then for those that are authors that are listening, how can they find your open calls?
Okay. Right now we're working on a web page. We have a Substack.
That's where it is. Go there.
You go. At the banner across the top, there's open calls. We are very firm. We list the name, what it's about. We list when it opens, when it closes, when the contracts go out, and when it publishes. And we stick to that fairly
fairly religiously. Sometimes we're off by a day because we can't decide between the 60 stories, which tends. But we're pretty hard on our deadlines because we don't like people to send in a story and wait 3 years to find out if something happened, because God knows that's never happened in publishing ever for 40-some-odd years.
So if you'll go to the Substack.
Substack.
Open calls are there.
Record Press Substack. It's there.
I will also say that we pay everybody gets an equal share. Mm-hmm. If you send us a short story, we will hang on to the rights for a year.
If we publish it,
If we publish it, we'll hang on to the rights for a year. If we don't, the ladies will send back a letter saying either a rewrite, resubmit, or no thank you as quick as possible. After a year, you get the rights back, but we will keep paying you as long as the anthology sells. Mm-hmm. The only firm rule we have is it must be entertaining. All else is negotiable. And we ask for stories that are 5,000, 8,000 words. If you send us an entertaining story that's 12,000 words, we'll publish it. If you send us an entertaining story that's 3,500 words, we'll publish it.
Well, if it fits, if it fits the needs of the story, there you are.
Send it. We can negotiate on if you have a story that fits our theme, send it. Well, if it's a little over, a little under, or a little squirrely, we'll negotiate.
As far as being able to buy the books, if you want to read the books, we're finding that there's a fantastic audience for short stories out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I knew existed.
Mm-hmm.
And we're almost single-handedly reviving the pulp magazines.
Yeah.
But as anthologies, and we, if you subscribe to the Substack, which is a free subscription, there are people that have paid us because they like us, but you don't have to. You'll get all of the new releases will come out through Substack, and you can get those in your email. And our print books, we're moving to, to digital using Ingram because it's better quality.
Yep, and Baker and Taylor.
But One Way. For ebooks, you can find us on Amazon.
Yep. And you find One Racketeer Press person a story, and they're all linked together because we number them just like Daw books back in the beginning.
Yep.
And numbered all of their yellow spines. So it's 1 through 24 as of today. Yeah. So how did we do that? Oh my god. That's like
coffee.
Can we do it? It's lots of coffee.
The mask, I'll get coffee.
Coffee.
All right.
Maggie's, sorry.
Yeah, Maggie 3 just came out today.
We planned for it to be launched on the 15th of March, and I was actually so relieved it came out early because I beware the Ides of March.
Yeah, it's tomorrow.
March 15th. Yeah, I was kind of dreading that, and I just never voiced it. I'm not superstitious, but yeah. I never said it aloud, and I just was so happy it dropped early.
Yep. Yeah. Cats, they do what they want. So,
That's what
we're trying now. Individually, where can every one of you be found? I know, Cedar, I've got all of yours for the show notes because you were very easy. You were a Google search away. But for the rest of you, you made it very easy for me, and I appreciate that.
I've been doing this for a while. And again, the Substack is the best place for people to subscribe. You'll get all my whimsy, but you'll also get all the book releases. My latest story would have been Farm Wife. Earlier this week, short story. That one's a Western romance, so way off the track of what your readers like.
I mean, if you throw a space cowboy in there, you could make it speculative fiction.
Not that story, but the series before that was indeed very old school planetary romance.
Nice. What about you, Rita?
I have a short novella. Well, that's redundant as well as repetitive, isn't it? Sorry. I have a novella on Amazon called Mabel Mirkwood and The Overly Familiar. I've slept since then. I've got a follow up that I'm working on that I hope to publish on there by the end of the year. It's a mid century wise woman healer witch in East Texas. And
we love her.
And she, 1950s. She's set in 1951. She does have a broom. She drives an old pickup truck, and she has a weird kind of cultural clash with a new familiar who's from London. And anyway,
it's such a lovely story.
It's a lot of fun. I had fun. I'm having fun with her, and she's a fun character. And I'm picturing somebody, a character who was on the old Gunsmoke series, as she's a little potato of a lady and kind of like, kind of a mess, but good. And she's been fun to write, and also fun to write in that the whole having the technology that they had in the 50s, but none of the wireless stuff we've got going on. So it's pretty, I didn't want to deal with the whole issue of digital technology. So we're analog, but and they have a clash over how one takes tea.
Yeah,
but
that was a fun scene.
But it's a hoot. It's kind of it's very, very country, very rural fantasy. But I've really enjoyed it. And
I have my blog. Other than that, you can find me under a bridge, threatening goats. I don't. As one does. I'm not a people person. I'm very, very. My blog. That's it. I've got a private Facebook, but Law Dog has a Facebook page, but it's mostly just updates.
Mm-hmm. So I'm one of the three moms. I'm the elder mom of the apocalypse, and we have every Wednesday evening, we have the Three Moms of the Apocalypse broadcast, which is the only place you will find me. Otherwise, I'm here at the Blanket Fort, where we are currently sitting. practicing my maiden name, which was Goad, trying to get all these people to get their stuff done. So that's kind of my job.
Actually, she's the reason the whole bunch of folks are here.
Yeah. Yeah. Because she was like, you should move here. And she found this space for me and a house to live in, which was great. So I do make costumes, but most people can't afford me. So,
you know what? I bless the day that you walked into my life. You're just one of the most incredible. She's one of the most phenomenal theatrical costume designers. You've got to look up her stuff.
I'm retired now, so.
But she did some famous operas and ballets that probably some people have heard of.
Yeah,
and well, she's really a phenomenal craftsperson. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm also very good at getting people who are running around with their hair on fire to actually calm down and do their stuff. So
you're like an ADHD person herder.
Yeah. So
which is worse than herding cats. So thank you.
Having run anthologies myself, you have my sympathy because it is like herding cats. Like, but please just give me your information. I want to be able to pay you. How hard is this?
Oh my God. No, you're not. Oh, don't push that button.
We have a young gentleman. We have a young gentleman.
We had a Where's Waldo.
We did. So. Last LibertyCon, we went on the Writer Dojo. And one of the things that I was stressing was, if you're a new author, would you please check your author email on a regular basis?
Because I'm the one who gets to deal with that. I get to send out the contracts, which is really fun because everyone's like, sweet, I got into this anthology because we really love new authors. We really love new authors a lot. So we had this one we were doing, I can't remember which one it was, but it was recent, where this guy, I sent him a contract.
Great story.
Fabulous story. And I was like, damn, we've never heard of this guy. Let's go get him, you know? So I sent him a contract and he gets back to me with the contract and then he disappears. And we have to like get publisher stuff and all these. He has to respond to more stuff.
He has to authorize stuff.
And it was like 2 days before we had to have everything on publisher so we could publish the book. And I'd been sending email after email after email. And I'd been on the Writer Dojo group and I'd been on Facebook and I'd been in North Texas Troublemakers and so, I searched for him.
Privilege. I went, hey, does anybody know this?
Right.
This and first name, last name?
So it was like, oh. And so it was Monday and I had to yank his story. Because we can't move forward without his approval. So, you know, like the next day.
Tuesday
morning.
He's listening to Writer Dojo.
Yeah. I get this email. I'm really sorry. I should have looked at my email. Funny, I was listening to the Writer Dojo with you guys. And it was like, maybe. And he was talking about, I should check the email. He went, oh, I should look at my email. Giant list from Jonna going, where are you?
You snooze, you lose.
So, but it was a really good story. Unfortunately, because we do that, he got into the next one. But that man has never, ever missed an email from me again. He was like, so when is, you're going to move me to the next one? I went, yeah. And he said, so when is that? And I said, check your email. Oh, my God. Anyway.
So this is the part, dear listener, where I remind you to please be kind and speak your mind on the reviewing platforms. Your reviews help the right readers find the right books, and that is especially true when you're dealing with small press and indie published authors because they don't have large budgets. So your reviews help sort of tweak the algorithm so people find them and to tell them what you like and don't like because authors like people reading their books. So if you don't like what they're writing, they kind of want to know that so they could try something else. So
I would, I would like to add one thing.
He's doing it. Don't interrupt
him. No, I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. What do you want to add?
Please don't review our books when you have a case in the ass in the post office. I hate reviews that say, love this story, arrived a torn cover, 1 star. I can't.
Yes. You're reviewing the content, not the quality of it arrival, but separate review category. But
yes.
All right. This is the part, dear listener, where I tell you where you can find us. Now that you know where you can find all the fine folks at this lovely independent press, you can find us on our link, linktr.ee, linktr.ee/Blasters and Blades Podcast. Again, linktr.ee/Blasters and Blades Podcast, where we link to all the things, the bit shoots, the rumbles, the Twitters, the YouTubes, email blastersandbladespodcast@gmail.com. Again, blastersandbladespodcast@gmail.com. We check that at least once a week, people, I promise. We have our Blasters and Rockets Facebook group and Facebook page. And most importantly, we link to Madam Stabby Stab's Instagram, Twitter, and email, where you can send all your hateful comment and she will reply and make you cry. That should go on a t-shirt, Nick. Get that down on paper. All right. And we have our website at anchor.fm/blasters-and-blades. Again, anchor.fm/blasters-and-blades, where for as little as 99 cents a month, you can help keep the lights on. These episodes aren't free to produce, and we appreciate your patronage. And if you want to support the show more directly, you can go to buymeacoffee.com/author J.R. Hanley. Again, buymeacoffee.com/author J.R. Hanley. Be sure to put in the comment section that it is for the podcast. Well, I almost stumbled over that one. We promise we will keep our co-hosts duly caffeinated. They will drink until that coffee beer and coffee food podcast runs pours out of their eyeballs. See what I did there, Nick? Doing an extra ad spot for you. There you go. And with that, thank you for spending some of your precious time with us. For my crazy co-host, I am J.R. Hanley, and this was the Blasters and Blades podcast. We'll be back next week at the same time where we'll indulge our love of nerd culture, cheesy jokes, and all things that go boom. Thank you, fine ladies and gentlemen, for coming on.
Happy to be here.
Thank you. All right. We're